I'm doing wrong, laugh at myself, change, and do better. She said, I'm curious how many here are afraid of change. No one responded, so she suggested, how about a show of hands? Only one hand went up. Well, it looks like we've got one honest person in our group, she said, and then continued. Maybe you'll like this next question better. How many here think other people are afraid of change? Practically everyone raised their hands. Then they all started laughing. What does that tell us? Denial, Nathan answered. Sure, Michael admitted. Sometimes we're not even aware that we're afraid. I know I wasn't. When I first heard the story, I loved the question, what would you do if you weren't afraid? Then Jessica added, well, what I got from the story is that change is happening everywhere, and that I will do better when I can adjust to it quickly. I remember years ago when our company was selling our encyclopedia as a set of more than 20 books. One person tried to tell us that we should put our whole encyclopedia on a single computer disk and sell it for a fraction of the cost. It would be easier to update, would cost us so much less to manufacture, and so many more people could afford it. But we all resisted. Why did you resist? Nathan asked. Because we believed then that the backbone of our business was our large sales force, who called on people door to door. Keeping our sales force depended on the big commissions they earned from the high price of our product. We had been doing this successfully for a long time and thought it would go on forever. Laura said, maybe that's what it meant in the story about Hem and Haw's arrogance of success. They didn't notice they needed to change what had once been working. Nathan said, so you thought your old cheese was your only cheese? Yes, and we wanted to hang on to it. When I think back on what happened to us, I see that it's not just that they moved the cheese, but that the cheese has a life of its own and eventually runs out. Anyway, we didn't change, but a competitor did, and our sales fell badly. We've been going through a difficult time. Now, another big technological change is happening in the industry, and no one at the company seems to want to deal with it. It doesn't look good. I think I could be out of a job soon. It's maze time, Carlos called out. Everyone laughed, including Jessica. Carlos turned to Jessica and said, it's good that you can laugh at yourself. Frank offered, that's what I got out of the story. I tend to take myself too seriously. I noticed how Haw changed when he could finally laugh at himself and at what he was doing. No wonder he was called Haw. The group groaned at the obvious play on words. Angela asked, do you think that Hem ever changed and found new cheese? Elaine said, I think he did. I don't, Corey said. Some people never change and they pay a price for it. I see people like Hem in my medical practice. They feel entitled to their cheese. They feel like victims when it's taken away and blame others. They get sicker than people who let go and move on. Then Nathan said quietly, as though he was talking to himself, I guess the question is, what do we need to let go of, and what do we need to move on to? No one said anything for a while. I must admit, Nathan said, I saw what was happening with stores like ours in other parts of the country, but I hoped it wouldn't affect us. I guess it's a lot better to initiate change while you can than it is to try to react and adjust to it. Maybe we should move our own cheese. What do you mean? Frank asked. Nathan answered, I can't help but wonder where we would be today if we had sold the real estate under all our old stores and built one great modern store to compete with the best of them. Laura said, maybe that's what Haw meant when he wrote on the wall, savor the adventure and move with the cheese. Frank said, I think some things shouldn't change. For example, I want to hold on to my basic values, but I realize now that I would be better off if I had moved with the cheese a lot sooner in my life. Well, Michael, it was a nice little story, Richard the class skeptic said. But how did you actually put it into use in your company? The group didn't know it yet, but Richard was experiencing some changes himself. Recently separated from his wife, he was now trying to balance his career with raising his teenagers. Michael replied, you know, I thought my job was just to manage the daily problems as they came up, when what I should have been doing was looking ahead and paying attention to where we were going. And boy, did I manage those problems, 24 hours a day. I wasn't a lot of fun to be around. I was in a rat race, and I couldn't get out. Laura said, "So you were managing when you needed to be leading." "Exactly," Michael said. "Then when I heard the story of who moved my cheese, I realized my job was to paint a picture of new cheese that we would all want to pursue, so we could enjoy changing and succeeding, whether it was at work or in life." Nathan asked, "What did you do at work?" "Well, when I asked people in our company who they were in the story, I saw we had every one of the four characters in our organization. I came to see that the Sniffs, Scurries, Hems, and Haws each needed to be treated differently. Our Sniffs could sniff out changes in the marketplace, so they helped us update our corporate vision. They were encouraged to identify how the changes would result in new products and services our customers would want. The Sniffs loved it and told us they enjoyed working in a place that recognized change and adapted in time. Our Scurries liked to get things done, so they were encouraged to take actions based on the new corporate vision. They just needed to be monitored so they didn't scurry off in the wrong direction. They were then rewarded for actions that brought us new cheese. They liked working in a company that valued action and results. "What about the Hems and Haws?" Angela asked. "Unfortunately, the Hems were the anchors that slowed us down," Michael answered. "They were either too comfortable or too afraid to change. Some of our Hems changed only when they saw the sensible vision we painted that showed them how changing would work to their advantage. Our Hems told us they wanted to work in a place that was safe, so the change needed to make sense to them and increase their sense of security. When they realized the real danger of not changing, some of them changed and did well. The vision helped us turn many of our Hems into Haws." "What did you do with the Hems who didn't change?" Frank wanted to know. "We had to let them go," Michael said sadly. "We wanted to keep all our employees, but we knew if our business didn't change quickly enough, we would all be in trouble." "Then," he said, "the good news is that while our Haws were initially hesitant, they were open-minded enough to learn something new, act differently, and adapt in time to help us succeed. They came to expect change and actively look for it. Because they understood human nature, they helped us paint a realistic vision of new cheese that made good sense to practically everyone. They told us they wanted to work in an organization that gave people the confidence and tools to change. And they helped us keep our sense of humor as we went after our new cheese." Richard commented, "You got all that from a little story?" Michael smiled. "It wasn't the story, but what we did differently based on what we took from it." Angela admitted, "I'm a little bit like Hem, so for me, the most powerful part of the story was when Haw laughed at his fear and went on to paint a picture in his mind where he saw himself enjoying new cheese. It made going into the maze less fearful and more enjoyable, and he eventually got a better deal. That's what I want to do more often." Frank grinned. "So even Hems can sometimes see the advantage of changing." Carlos laughed. "Like the advantage of keeping their jobs," Angela added, "or even getting a good raise." Richard, who had been frowning during the discussion, said, "My manager's been telling me our company needs to change. I think what she's really telling me is that I need to, but I haven't wanted to hear it. I guess I never really knew what the new cheese was that she was trying to move us to, or how I could gain from it." A slight smile crossed Richard's face as he said, "I must admit I like the idea of seeing new cheese and imagining yourself enjoying it. It lightens everything up. When you see how it can make things better, you get more interested in making the change happen. Maybe I could use this in my personal life," he added. "My children seem to think that nothing in their lives should ever change. I guess they're acting like Hem. They're angry. They're probably afraid of what the future holds. Maybe I haven't painted a realistic picture of new cheese for them, probably because I don't see it myself." The group was quiet as several people thought about their own lives. "Well," Jessica said, "most people here have been talking about jobs. But as I listened to the story, I also thought about my personal life. I think my current relationship is old cheese that has some pretty serious mold on it." Corey laughed in agreement. "Me too. I probably need to let go of a bad relationship. Angela countered, or perhaps the old cheese is just old behavior. What we really need to let go of is the behavior that is the cause of our bad relationships, and then move on to a better way of thinking and acting. Ouch, Corey reacted. Good point. The new cheese is a new relationship with the same person? Richard said, I'm beginning to think there is more to this than I thought. I like the idea of letting go of old behavior instead of letting go of the relationship. Repeating the same behavior will just get you the same results. As far as work goes, maybe instead of changing jobs, I should be changing the way I'm doing my job. I'd probably have a better position by now if I did. Then Becky, who lived in another city but had returned for the reunion, said, As I was listening to the story and to everyone's comments here, I've had to laugh at myself. I've been like him for so long, hemming and hawing and afraid of change. I didn't realize how many other people did this as well. I'm afraid I've passed it on to my children without even knowing it. As I think about it, I realize change really can lead you to a new and better place, although you're afraid it won't at the time. I remember a time when our son was a sophomore in high school. My husband's job required us to move from Illinois to Vermont, and our son was upset because he had to leave his friends. He was a star swimmer, and the high school in Vermont had no swim team, so he was angry with us for making him move. As it turned out, he fell in love with the Vermont mountains, took up skiing, skied on his college team, and now lives happily in Colorado. If we had all enjoyed this cheese story together over a cup of hot chocolate, we could have saved our family a lot of stress. Jessica said, I'm going home to tell my family this story. I'll ask my children who they think I am, sniff, scurry, hem, or haw, and who they feel they are. We could talk about what we feel our family's old cheese is and what our new cheese could be. That's a good idea, Richard said, surprising everyone, even himself. Frank then commented, I think I'm going to be more like Haw and move with the cheese and enjoy it. And I'm going to pass this story along to my friends who are worried about leaving the military and what the change might mean to them. It could lead to some interesting discussions. Michael said, Well, that's how we improved our business. We had several discussions about what we got from the cheese story and how we could apply it to our situation. It was great because we had language that was fun for us to use to talk about how we were dealing with change. It was very effective, especially as it spread deeper into the company. Nathan asked, What do you mean by deeper? Well, the further we went into our organization, the more people we found who felt they had less power. They were understandably more afraid of what the change imposed from above might do to them, so they resisted change. In short, a change imposed is a change opposed. But when the cheese story was shared with literally everyone in our organization, it helped us change the way we looked at change. It helped everyone laugh or at least smile at their old fears and want to move on. I only wished I'd heard the cheese story sooner, Michael added. How come? Carlos asked. Because by the time we got around to addressing the changes, our business had already fallen off so badly that we had to let people go, as I said earlier, including some good friends. It was hard on all of us. However, those who stayed and most of those who left said the cheese story helped them see things differently and eventually cope better. Those who had to go out and look for a new job said it was hard at first, but recalling the story was a great help to them. Angela asked, What helped them most? Michael replied, After they got past their fear, they told me the best thing was realizing that there was new cheese out there just waiting to be found. They said holding a picture of new cheese in their minds, seeing themselves doing well in a new job, made them feel better and helped them do better in job interviews. Several got better jobs. Laura asked, What about the people who remained in your company? Well, Michael said, Instead of complaining about the changes that were happening, people now said, They just moved our cheese. Let's look for the new cheese. It saved a lot of time and reduced stress. Before long, the people who had been resisting saw the advantage of changing. They even helped bring about change. Corey said, Why do you think they changed? They changed after the peer pressure in our company changed. He asked, What happens in most organizations you've been in when a change is announced by top management? Do most people say the change is a great idea or a bad idea? A bad idea, Frank answered. Yes, Michael agreed. Why? Carlos said, because people want things to stay the same and they think the change will be bad for them. When one person says the change is a bad idea, others say the same. Yes, they may not really feel that way, Michael said, but they agree in order to fit in. That's the sort of peer pressure that fights change in any organization. Becky asked, so how were things different after people heard the cheese story? Michael said simply, the peer pressure changed. No one wanted to look like him. Everyone laughed. They wanted to sniff out the changes ahead of time and scurry into action rather than get hemmed in and be left behind. Nathan said, that's a good point. No one in our company would want to look like him. They might even change. Why didn't you tell us the story at our last reunion? This could work. Michael said, it does work. It works best, of course, when everyone in your organization knows the story, whether it's in a large corporation, a small business, or your family, because an organization can only change when enough people in it change. Then he offered one last thought. When we saw how well it worked for us, we passed the story along to people we wanted to do business with, knowing they were also dealing with change. We suggested we might be their new cheese, that is, better partners for them to succeed with. It led to new business. That gave Jessica several ideas and reminded her that she had some early sales calls in the morning. She looked at her watch and said, well, it's time for me to leave this cheese station and find some new cheese. The group laughed and began saying their goodbyes. Many of them wanted to continue the conversation but needed to leave. As they left, they thanked Michael again. He said, I'm very glad you found the story so useful, and hope that you will have the opportunity to share it with others soon. Afterward. The story of Who Moved My Cheese was created by Dr. Spencer Johnson during a period of enormous change in his personal life. Although it took almost 20 years for Dr. Johnson to turn this story into a book, its success was immediate. It became a number one bestseller. 1 million hardcover copies were in print within the first 16 months, over 21 million copies in the next 5 years. The story has found its way into homes, companies, schools, churches, the military, and sports teams. It has improved careers, businesses, health, and marriages, and has been translated into many foreign languages. By 2005, Amazon.com reported that Who Moved My Cheese was their number one best-selling single book title of all time. In July 2008, Dr. Johnson came into the Simon & Schuster studios to talk about the phenomenon of Who Moved My Cheese, the changes that he has seen since he wrote the book 10 years ago, and why he felt the need to invent this story in the first place. Dr. Spencer Johnson.
Well, I remember in 1979 when I first invented this story for myself. I didn't write the book until 1997, so I lived it for almost 20 years. In 1979, I was going through a divorce. By the way, she was terrible and I was a perfect prince. And of course, I knew that wasn't the case, and I knew that if I didn't change, I would probably have the same experience again. And so I really invented this silly little story of four characters, Sniff and Scurry and Hem and Haw, running through a maze looking for cheese, which represents whatever you think is worth pursuing. And I knew that the best way to change is to laugh at yourself, laugh at your mistakes and your follies so you're not defensive, and to say, you know what, I make mistakes and I need to change. And I think that if you realize that new cheese is better, then it's fun to change. What you're afraid of course, is that the change is going to lead to something worse. So it's been fascinating. I've never written a book, whether it was a one-minute manager or any of the other books I've written, where people have come up to me with the book open to a certain page and asked me to autograph their book. And when I see that, I always know what the page is. It's always, what would I do if I wasn't afraid? That is remarkable. And I remember asking myself that. I didn't realize it was so powerful, but it was useful for me. Because, of course, I was never going to get married again. I was never going to do this, never do that. And that's fear-based. And how many of us are afraid of change? When I'm speaking, when I used to speak more often, I would ask the people in the audience, if you're afraid of change, will you please stand up? And, of course, nobody stood up. And I would say, well, maybe you'll like this question better. If you think other people are afraid of change, would you stand up? And, of course, the entire audience stands up, and they all start laughing. And so I said, and who is it you're laughing at? And, of course, they recognize it's themselves. If we can laugh at ourselves, I think that's the best sign of mental health. If we don't defend our position. Here we are 10 years later, and what many people thought was going to happen has happened. Would there be more or less change in the next 10 years? Well, Alvin Toffler, who wrote Future Shock long before I wrote Who Moved My Cheese, predicted that change would accelerate. It would be faster and would be more a state of future shock for all of us because we weren't taught to think in terms of change. I remember the old days, you used to have job security in Japan if you worked for one corporation, or here if you worked for a bank or for IBM. And, of course, those industries have undergone tremendous change. So what about us? What about the changes in our own lives? And how does 2008 compare to 1998? I think we'd all agree that change is more rapid. It's on a larger scale. And the people who are going to win, who are winning today, are those who develop change skills. And most of us hadn't even heard of the phrase change skills. So what are those skills? Like sniff, can you sniff out what's coming? Can you anticipate change? If you can, you can be more prepared for it. Can you take new actions? Something different. You know, try something new. Maybe it'll work, maybe it won't work, and you can change course easily in the maze. Or can you be like Haw? Haw is named appropriately. Ha ha. Laugh at yourself. It's not just hemming and hawing, delaying, adapting to change, but it's hawing. It's laughing at yourself. Haw couldn't do that. It's ironic. His name was Haw, but he would just scream, "Who moved my cheese?" suggesting it was unfair. Not that any of us, of course, have ever done that. And him, while he also delayed adapting to change, finally looked at Haw and started laughing because he saw himself in Haw. And he laughed at himself, and I think that's our challenge. So I think in 2008, if we can adapt and have fun adapting, more change skills, we're going to prosper more in 2009. Why would almost everybody, and this includes different cultures, why would they all pick the same page? What would I do if I wasn't afraid? So I reflected on that, and I looked at myself, because most of my adult life, I didn't think I was afraid. Me? I was a physician, and I became a full-time writer, so I left medicine, and people said, what a courageous thing to do. Not really, because it's what I had a passion to do. So I never saw myself as afraid. But when I examined things more closely, someone else would have recognized that I was afraid. I didn't recognize it. And I think just asking yourself the question, what would I do if I wasn't afraid? Of course, your first reaction is probably is, well, I'm not afraid. And if you say that with too much energy, it should be a clue. I think the most devastating fear is the fear that we're unaware of. I remember in the first edition of Who Moved My Cheese, which has been rewritten 10 times since it was published, based on reader feedback, I remember I had originally written Fear Immobilizes You. And then I heard Andy Grove, who wrote Only the Paranoid Survive, make the really good point that a little fear is very helpful. If you're afraid that your competitors are gaining on you in the business world, it prompts you to innovate and do things. So I rewrote that section by adding a couple of sentences. You know, some fear is very useful. Too much fear immobilizes you. So I think this whole element of fear, once you become aware of it, you're not as frightened. It doesn't run you as much. I think what runs us is what we're not aware of. I think the power of Who Moved My Cheese today compared to when it came out in 1998 is that all of us are dealing with much more change than we did 10 years ago. Well, guess what's going to happen 10 years from now? So I think those of us who develop change skills now are going to be able to use them for a lifetime. It's interesting. I think the second most powerful idea in the book is what would I do if I wasn't afraid? And I think I realized I didn't make the most important point clear enough. Because I think the most important point is to imagine new cheese. imagine how much you would enjoy it. It's in the book. Hal, as he's running through the maze, imagines what new cheese would be and how much he would enjoy it. And that's actually what drove me when I was younger. What would a joyful marriage be like? What would an ideal husband be like? Starting with yourself is much more powerful than starting with the other person. If I could just get that other person to change, then my life would work. Wrong. As you change, you become a magnet. And you wind up attracting very different energy to you, a very different person. In business, a very different world. Now, while I love and appreciate and am honored by the business community's affection for who moved my cheese and how often it's used in business, I think the real power is also in individuals' lives, and that's where my passion is. As a physician, I'm much more interested in helping individuals get something better, because I think enough of us individuals get something better, we'll make the world a better place. It's interesting that we made the changes in the book seamless. We never announced them. I think what changed is the sense of urgency. I think in 98, we didn't feel the sense of urgency. It wasn't moving as fast as it is now. And I think probably the biggest single change has been the internet. I think in the last 10 years, the internet has changed not only our world, but the speed of transactions. I mean, it is remarkable. And what used to happen in America is now happening globally, and we're finding out about it almost instantaneously. That's a major change. The timing of everything is so much faster. And that's why I think the need for clarity today is much more important even than it was in 98, because once you get clear on what works and what doesn't work, you can be pretty quick and pretty decisive. A good friend of mine has an expression. He says, it's not getting it that takes so long. When you get it, it's usually in a microsecond. You go, ah, I got it. And so I think that's been the biggest change in the last 10 years is the speed of change and the need for clarity and urgency so you can respond quickly. Now, that doesn't mean knee-jerk. I'm a great believer in thinking things through. You know, sleep on it for a night. See if it makes as much sense to you the next day as it does today. I think it's now becoming more fun to change than it used to be because you see more payoffs. You see it in products. You see products changing faster than they used to. They get better and they get cheaper. So why not do the same thing ourselves? Why not have fun changing? I'll give you another change. We're working now more in teams than we used to. As a sort of idealistic young physician, I used to try to help a lot of people. I don't know how many of you have tried helping the same person with the same issue over and over and over, but my patience is worn thin. So when I wrote the first draft of Who Moved My Cheese, I think I must have been trying to help someone a lot with the same issue over and over, because in the first draft, the first issue, nobody went back for him. And he didn't get it. He was left behind. And the reaction poured in for people. Wait a minute, they're supposed to be buddies. How come he didn't go back and help them? So I said, okay, I'll go back once. And I think we all need to go back at least once. We need to help each other up. And then after we've given it our best shot, if the other person isn't ready to change, we need to respect that. God bless you, good luck, and we need to let them experience the consequence. Consequence is a wonderful teacher. I think consequence is much more powerful than conversation. And when we try to keep people from consequences, whether it's our kids or our friends or our colleagues or our parents or whatever, I think we get in the way of them changing because pain is a wonderful teacher. So I would say that is one of the many changes that is in the current edition of Who Moved My Cheese that wasn't in the early editions. Now we went back for him, Haw did. Go back for his buddy. He made a real honest effort. But when him looked out into the maze, it was just too scary. What he didn't realize is it's safer to be in the maze, even if you're lost, than it is to stay in a cheeseless situation where you're going to lose. And so I think this whole element of teamwork, which I really believe in, is very powerful, is much more powerful than any individual. And I think it's a great way to adapt to change is get some people on your team. I think just from the volumes, the over 25 million copies in print today are a testimony that as wonderful as it is for business, because if business doesn't change, it really pays a very big price today. And the biggest reason that businesses don't change faster is because not enough people want to change. They want to stay the same because they think it's safe. So in the business world, the key is to get enough people in an organization wanting to change. And the minute you realize you're going to get something better, Of course you want to change. So I've been very grateful for the business community, the way they embraced the former book that I wrote with Ken Blanchard called The One-Minute Manager and Who Moved My Cheese. It really was purchased on a much larger level by individuals. And I think for family members and people they cared about. I remember when I was on the Today Show with Matt Lauer, he very kindly said that he often gives my books to his friends. And I think that's what's most rewarding and most powerful, is that to care enough about somebody else that you actually give them a copy of the audio, which is wonderful. You can listen to it in the car or the book. I think that's where the real power is today. There's so much more power to the individual with the internet. I think it's fascinating that presidential candidates are both proposing change. And I think the real appeal mostly is to individuals. It's individuals in business and individuals outside of it in families, because individuals have the most control over themselves. They can't always control the business, the large organization. But they can choose to change. They can imagine their new cheese, whatever that is to them. And then if you follow that vision of new cheese through the maze, it's actually fun. It's not scary. You can't be both imagining something better and afraid at the same time. I think one of the things that's meant the most to me over the years is how many husbands and wives gave it to each other. One found it. I remember standing in line once at the Army-Navy game meeting the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, who was an Army guy. And there was this long line, and there was this assistant who was, you know, waving in the background, everybody go faster through the line because the general wants to meet everybody and doesn't have much time. And as I came up, we all had little name tags on. And this lady, the general's wife, who stood in line before him, squealed, saying, "Oh, my God," she tugs her husband, "Eric, do you know who this is?" Now, my name is not well recognized. My books are. But he said, "This is the fellow that wrote Who Moved My Cheese." Well, she read the book first. And she gave it to her mate. And he implemented it in the Army. There's the power of teamwork. It wasn't that the person in the organization discovered the book. It was a member of his family discovered the book. And it touched her individually. And I think that's where the power of the individual comes in. And then she got her favorite teammate, her husband, to look at it. And that affected him. And then he affected an entire organization. And the Army began to change faster. It's like the head of the Israeli Army every Christmas gives a gift. And he gave Who Moved My Cheese to all of his top commanders. The irony was that in many Arab countries, the Arabs were doing the same thing. They were using the book with their commanders, with their government leaders. And so each side recognized, we need to change. And if we do, we could get something better. When you're younger, you think certain things are important. And they're usually acquisition. More this, more that. And then as you get older and you find those things are not actually very fulfilling, they're not as satisfying as you hoped they would be. They're like empty calories. I think what happens as you get more life experience and perhaps experience more pain, that you shift what's important to you and you change. And it's an interesting point about Hall wanting to live in a mansion atop Camber Bear Hill, which, by the way, I think is just fine. Go for it. Enjoy the mansion. I don't mean to say that that's not important. It just isn't anywhere near as important as what Haw thinks. He wants to live in a comfortable cottage with a loving family. Now, if you can get your mansion on Camber Bear Hill and have a loving family, that's the best of both worlds. But there's no question which is more valuable, which is more nurturing. And I think it's fascinating. I know this will date it, but as we saw the hostages released from the jungle, what did they think was important? What do people think that's important that have reached the top of the pile? They almost always say family and friends. And because that's what nurtures you. And in my new book, Peaks and Valleys, which Simon & Schuster will provide the audio for, as you get older, the things you think are peaks, highs that you look forward to, they really do change. You get your biggest joys out of different things. And it's interesting how Peaks and Valleys ties in with Who Moved My Cheese, because the valleys really are moments of fear. The peaks are times that you appreciate what you have, and the valleys are times that you long for what is missing and how you're afraid that's going to affect you in the future. And so it's interesting, even though the new book is entirely new and different, it's about a young man that lives in a valley and he's unhappy in the valley. until he goes to visit an old man who lives on a peak and discovers the peaks and valleys approach to work and life. And it's amazing how, I didn't even think of this when I was writing it, but how Peaks and Valleys really is a sequence. It's definitely not a sequel, because him and Haw don't live on the peak or in the valley. They're just two characters, a young man and an old man, not unlike the one-man manager. But the books are remarkably related, because Who Moved My Cheese is about change, and Peaks and Valleys are about the parade of changes we all have in our life, that work and life is a parade of peaks and valleys, ups and downs. And once you understand the secrets of the peaks and you know how to manage your good times, which most people don't think they have to be managed, they wind up being squandered by most of us. And once you understand the purpose of a valley, and basically the peaks are times for you to appreciate what you have, and valleys are times when you long for what is missing. Well, in the definition gives you the answer. You can take any moment, and it depends what you're looking at. So again, it's about change, and it's adapting to the natural changes that happen all the time. Managing the good times, I think, means three things. I think, number one, it means remembering how you got there. Number two, I think it means being humble and curious to learn more. And number three, it means saving some of your resources that you will need to prosper in the forthcoming valleys. The mistake you make on the peak is arrogance that you're not aware of. The arrogance is, I did this. This will last forever. Wrong. You're not in touch with reality. You didn't get there alone. A lot of it was timing. You see this with real estate developers. They think they're geniuses, and some of them are very good, but it was the cycle. And if you keep behaving in the same way during the down cycle, you'll go bankrupt. So it's the ability, like Who Moved My Cheese, to anticipate change. It's the respect of peaks and valleys. These cycles are secular, and you need to watch for the upcoming signs. So I think managing the peak means respecting it and respecting its temporary. The key, I think, is to be grateful on the peak. If you know how to manage your peaks and you know how to be grateful on the peak and humble on the peak, I call it being realistic on the peak, you will know how to come out of a valley faster. People want to know how to get out of a valley more than they want to know how to stay on a peak. But once you know how to stay on a peak by being grateful, it's easier to come out of a valley, because if you're really wise, you're grateful for your valleys. Your valleys are invaluable times. Most of us know that when we look back on the valley, like the person who gets fired, if you ask them within weeks, how are you feeling? It's almost devastating. To me, that's one of the scariest things in the world. You have to provide for your family and you're fired. And in downtimes, you see way too much of that. Ask them 5 years later. How do you feel about being fired 5 years ago? What do they almost always say? Best thing that ever happened to me. Because it wasn't a fit. It wasn't a match. Well, if we can look back on the valley, why not get it while we're in the valley? Because we can change that moment of fear right then and there. Again, what would you do if you weren't afraid? Taking that same metaphor, who gets the job when they go out looking for it? Two people have both been fired. One person is frightened for very understandable reasons. The other person is excited about new cheese. Which one do you want to hire? And so this stuff, which may seem philosophical, is actually very practical. The two books, Who Moved My Cheese and Peaks and Valleys, inform and complement each other to a remarkable extent. But I started writing Peaks and Valleys in 1990. Again, I'm a little slow writing such short books, but as Winston Churchill said before the House of Parliament, I'm sorry for giving such a long speech, but I didn't have the time to prepare a short one. Well, that's how I am with my books. They're very short, they're very small, but it takes me years of living the book first, which I think is the real power.
We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Who Moved My Cheese? An Amazing Way to Deal with Change in Your Work and in Your Life by Spencer Johnson. Read by Tony Roberts and Karen Ziemba. This program was produced and directed by Karen Frohman and Carol Shapiro. Associate producer, Amre Klimchak. Text copyright 1998 by Spencer Johnson, M.D. Production copyright 1998, Simon & Schuster, Inc. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.